Oh, wow. It's time for Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology.
Hello, Marcus. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am doing okay, I suppose.
just about at the end of your tether, right?
Yeah, just about. But we're getting there. How are you? You guys don't go back to school at all, though, for level two, do you?
No, we've been encouraged to stay away, stay at home. If you can work from home, just work from home. And the question is what we do with the kids, whether, because my two are in kindy, and we've yet to really figure out what we're going to do, whether they start next week or whether we wait another week or two.
Okay. All right. Yes. I guess you have to keep on top of what's going on, I suppose.
Yeah.
Big calls.
Yes.
But yes, what is going on? This mysterious blood clots intensify with the COVID-19 virus. Tell us more.
Yeah, that's right. So we talked, I don't know, a few weeks ago now, about blood clots and people with low oxygen levels. And it seems like this is a major thing now, as part of this disease. They are a very sort of big and small blood clots are a very frequent complication of COVID-19, and researchers have theories about why that is, and they're just sort of trying to understand, you know, what's going on. But anyone with a severe illness is really at risk of developing these clots, and they were found. Studies in the Netherlands and France suggested about 20 to 30% of really critically ill patients have significant blood clots due to COVID-19. A few weeks ago we talked about blood thinners like warfarin and is it heparin, trying to sort of use those to stop the clotting happening and sort of treat them.
Right.
But apparently now they think it's not really reliable. So people who are given these thinners, blood thinners, may get better, may have better results, but some don't. And a lot of young people actually are dying from strokes caused by blood clots forming in the brain. So these blood clots are really significantly bad sort of symptom
of
this disease. In fact, there's a protein or a fragment of a protein called D-dimer, which is generated when blood clots dissolve in your body. And it seems like high levels of this protein or this fragment of a protein appears to be a really good predictor of mortality, or really bad predictor. But I mean, it's a good, powerful predictor of mortality in hospitalized patients. So if they have a high levels of this protein, I guess it means that there's lots of clots, and a lot of those clots are sort of dissolving back again, presumably more are being formed, but this is strongly linked with mortality.
Far out. Okay.
Yeah. So there's why this is happening is really a mystery, and there are several theories. So one possibility is that the virus is attacking endothelial cells. These are cells that line the blood vessels. And these cells harbor the same receptor, this ACE2 receptor, that the virus uses to enter lung cells. And there's evidence now that endothelial cells can become infected. So the study's been around the world, but study in Switzerland and one in America showed that endothelial cells inside kidney tissue harbored the virus. So normally the blood vessels are sort of very smooth pipes, and these endothelial cells line these pipes, and the lining actually stops clots from forming. But if those cells are damaged, the cells that churn out lots of proteins, and those proteins trigger clotting. So that's quite a
serious.
Strong sort of suggestion of what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah. What can people do about that?
There are other ideas too. Well, this is it. This has to be. Scientists are really just got to try and figure out exactly what's going on. This is not typical. People with clotting, this is not a typical, it's not what you'd expect to see from someone who has a severe infection. Yeah, it's a really sort of new thing that the scientists are just trying to get their head around.
Wow. Okay. That's a little bit scary.
And the thing is, ventilation, mechanical ventilation often doesn't help. Yeah. So you can, with these clots forming, it doesn't matter how much you ventilate. It doesn't really help people get their blood oxygen levels back up again.
Okay. All right. Any good news?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I feel like I'm duty bound to give you a coronavirus story every week. So that's done.
And we
that's
appreciate done. The explanations.
So there's some good news. Okay. So we're going to talk a couple of stories about renewable energy.
Yes, please.
And or at least turning sunlight into energy or sunlight into things that are useful. So as probably most people know, plants do a pretty good job of turning sunlight into sugars and things like that that they need to grow. And so the parts of the cells that do that are called chloroplasts. And these are the parts that actually harvest the light, absorb the light, and then that light is then turned into it goes into a mechanism that converts carbon dioxide into energy, sort of rich molecules like sugars that in plants it gets turned into adenosine triphosphate and nicotinamide adenine dinucleotide phosphate, which is ATP and NADPH. These molecules are then used to convert CO2 from the air into glucose and other energy-rich organic molecules. Now, scientists, by combining light-harvesting machinery from actually spinach plants with enzymes from a whole bunch of different organisms, scientists have made an artificial chloroplast that is able to operate outside of cells, and it can harvest sunlight and use that resulting energy to convert carbon dioxide into energy-rich molecules. And this is sort of a souped-up photosynthesis. So it's able to convert CO2 directly into useful chemicals about 10 times faster than plants do normally.
Wow.
And so this is this potentially a really useful thing because it could boost the rate that plants grow. It could produce, you know, crop yields and things like that.
Brilliant.
CO2, yeah, that's good news. CO2 conversion starts with this enzyme called Rubisco, which prompts the CO2 to react with organic compounds. But the problem in plants is that this enzyme Rubisco is very, very slow, which means that plants grow fairly slowly. Each copy of the enzyme can grab only 5 to 10 carbon dioxide molecules per second. I mean, that sounds like quite a lot, but on the scale of biochemistry, that's very slow. And so it slows down the rate that plants can grow. And so a few years ago, some scientists sought to sort of speed this process up by using a bacterial enzyme that can catch CO2 molecules and force them to react about 10 times faster. And in combining these with other enzymes, they created this new CO2 to organic chemical cycle that was able to work much more efficiently than the sort of the CO2 grabbing cycle in plants.
Wow.
And this whole step but to get this to run, the plants needed to be able to absorb some more sunlight. They needed to be able to get more energy from the sun, and so they used these chloroplasts basically they boosted the efficiency of chloroplasts using several different molecules. They were able to sort of channel more energy into the CO2 converting part of the cell, and they've basically built this system now that can work outside of the cell and really increase the rate that these plants sort of suck out CO2 from the air and you know, create molecules that they need.
Amazing. Science.
Yes. And the last story. So solar panels. This is another renewable energy story. Solar panels obviously take light from the sun, and they absorb it, and they use it to generate electricity. But the problem with solar panels, and so today, more than 600 gigawatts of solar power solar power capacity exists in the world. So that's about 3% of the global electricity demand, which doesn't sound like a lot, but 15-20 years ago, when I first started, you know, working in this area, I work in this sort of related area, 3% of global electricity demand seemed like a very far off target. So it's actually huge. But the problem is, most solar cells are only about 15-20% efficient. In other words, only about 15-20% of the light that hits them, the energy that hits them from the sun, is converted into electricity. And the question is, where does the rest go? Well, the rest usually just goes up to heating the solar cell. It just warms it up. Just like when you stand out in the sun, you warm up.
Of course.
Yeah? And a typical solar cell could warm up by as much as 40 degrees C. So that's, you know, that's gets pretty hot. And the problem with that is, as the temperature, every degree of temperature above about 25 degrees C, the efficiency of the panel drops. So in other words, if the cells warm up because they're out in the sun, they generate more electricity, but then as they get hotter and hotter, their efficiency drops and gets lower and lower, and so the amount of electricity they can generate gets smaller and smaller. And so if you can find an economical way to keep the solar cells cool around about 20-25 degrees C, then even for every 0.1% boost in power conversion efficiency, you could save an awful lot. You could generate an awful lot more electricity and make the whole process more efficient.
Brilliant.
And so the question is, how do you keep solar cells cool? Well, someone could stand out there with a hose and spray water on them for days on end, but that's really not very efficient. And certainly not in the middle of the desert, where perhaps we won't want to put these solar cells. And so some companies are sort of selling water-cooled solar cells, but they all require abundant available water and storage tanks and pipes and pumps and lots of infrastructure.
Which is a lot of money.
Some scientists have, which is a lot of money, and it's not so good in developing countries where the infrastructure isn't as sophisticated. So we want a better way of, or maybe a more passive way of keeping those solar cells cool. So researchers have devised materials over the last few years that are able to suck water vapor from the air, and they condense it into liquid water. Among the best of those materials is a gel that really strongly absorbs water vapor at night when the air is cool and the humidity is relatively high. And that gel is a mixture of carbon nanotubes, these very, very fine, very thin tubes of carbon. And these are dispersed in polymers, and they're dispersed with basically a salt, calcium chloride, which is a water-attracting salt. And these causes the vapor in the air to condense into droplets. And those droplets are held inside the gel. So that happens at night, and when the heat rises during the day, the gel releases that water vapor, and it sort of flows out of the gel. And so what a couple of engineers in Hong Kong decided to do was, or realized, was that if they could use this technology as a coolant that could be attached, say, to the back of a solar cell, they could potentially keep these things cooler, because the water from the atmosphere would be condensed inside this gel at nighttime, and then during the day, as the solar cells were warming up, these gels would basically drip water down the panels and keep them cool. So it's just the same as, you know, sweating or standing in a rain shower just cools you down. And so these sort of sweating solar panels were able to operate quite a lot more efficiently and able to keep a lot cooler than just the solar cells without the gel attached.
Very simple. And very so clever. With
if you very very simple and yeah, it is very clever. There's one really big problem though, and this was written right at the end of the article. The problem is when it rains, gel stops working. Because it basically washes the salt away, washes this calcium right away. So they thought, well, if the gel is on the underside of the solar panel, then it would be shielded from the rain, but that doesn't seem like a very great solution. So they're trying to work out ways that they could sort of reconfigure this gel so that it doesn't degrade even when it's basically been rained on.
Sounds complicated and possibly controversial. I don't know if that's a word. Anyway, I hope that they work it out, though. Thank you so much, Marcus, for those positive stories and informing.
You're very welcome.
Information on COVID. We'll talk to you again in 2 weeks.
Yes, and hopefully we won't be talking about COVID still. Oh, well, maybe we will. Hopefully not.
Probably. All right, talk then.
Mind blown. That was Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology.